Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Spotlight on Youth. My name is Lauren Litton and I am the host of the show. Spotlight on Youth is dedicated to social and legal trends impacting the rights and well-being of children across the country. It is a project of the Children's Law Center, Inc., a not-for-profit children's rights legal services organization. The show is being streamed live over the Internet and will be available on demand after its conclusion. We encourage you to participate by asking our guests questions live on air by dialing 347-994-1149. That's 347-994-1149, and press the number 1 on your telephone keypad to indicate you have a question and you will be placed in a queue to be on air. Also, feel free to log into the chat room and pose a question there. Today we're talking about reentry. Reentry refers to the transition of youth from secure correctional settings or other out-of-home placements back to their schools, families, and communities. When it comes to juvenile justice, a lot of focus has been on keeping youth out of the system or, if involved, maintaining their placement at home with meaningful services. However, for those youth that have been sent to a correctional facility, reentry is a critical component of their rehabilitation and should start from the moment that a youth is removed from his or her home. In the United States, it is estimated that 100,000 youth every year are released back into their communities, returning with complex issues. For example, they're unable to access needed medical care, behavioral health, or other treatment services, and often struggle to obtain a job or re-enroll in school. We know developing a comprehensive reentry response fosters successful reintegration, reduces recidivism, increases public safety, and ultimately saves taxpayer dollars. Our guests have been leaders in taking an out-of-the-box approach to reentry and are here to share their journey. They are the Honorable Denise Cubbin, who was elected Lucas County Juvenile Court Judge in 2004 and became the Administrative Judge in April 2007. She has served as a lead judge at Lucas County's Model Court, which is part of the National Council of Juvenile Family Court Judges Model Court Project, and serves on numerous committees, including the National Council's Permanent Planning for Children Department's Advisory Committee, the Supreme Court of Ohio's Advisory Committee on Children, Families, and the Courts, and the Ohio Department of Youth Services Reclaim Advisory Committee. Prior to taking the bench, Judge Cubbin worked for 23 years as an assistant prosecutor. She holds a bachelor's in anthropology from the American University and a Juris Doctor from the University of Toledo College of Law. Charlie Johnson is the program manager of the Lucas County Juvenile Courts Community Integration for Training and Employment Program, known as SITE, which we're going to hear a lot about today. The SITE program partners with individuals, agencies, businesses, and other organizations to provide court-involved youth with job readiness training, linkage to employment, community service activities, and recreational opportunities. Charlie has been a chemical dependency counselor for 9 years and a therapist for 10, working with delinquent and emotionally disturbed youth and their families. He holds a bachelor's in social work from the University of Toledo and a master's in rehabilitation counseling from Bowling Green State University. So first, I'd like to welcome both of you to the show.
Thank you.
So we have listeners from around the country. Judge Cubbin, maybe you can do a quick overview of how the juvenile justice system is organized in Ohio and how that structure impacts reentry to give some background.
I'd be happy to do that. In the state of Ohio, a juvenile is defined as a person under the age of 18. So in Ohio, when a juvenile is adjudicated delinquent of a felony offense, our court can hold jurisdiction over that juvenile until his or her 21st birthday. So juveniles who are adjudicated delinquent of felony offenses can be committed to our Ohio Department of Youth Services. That's Kids Prison. As of September 30th of this year, a committing judge can grant early release in most circumstances at any time prior to the juvenile completing their sentences. Their sentences are minimum, depending on the level of felony, a minimum 6 months up to age 21 or a minimum of 1 year up to age 21. And for the homicides that they're committed to the age of 21. So when a juvenile returns home to his community or her community, he or she is on parole. That would be a term of community control. The Ohio Department of Youth Services, as I said, can then hold jurisdiction over them till the age of 21. A juvenile can obviously be recommitted for committing felony offenses, but also can be returned to the Department of Youth Services on parole violations in 90-day increments up to age 21. Since we're going to be talking about reentry today and we're focusing on felony offenders in this conversation, it's important for you to know that in Ohio we also have some treatment facilities that are secure residential facilities for felony delinquents. And these would be juveniles that would otherwise be committed to one of the institutions across the country, across the state for felony convictions. They are state-funded and then they are run by local county juvenile courts. Lucas County, we have the Youth Treatment Center, YTC, which our children are also appropriate candidates for our reentry process. Finally, another thing that's important to know about juvenile court judges and their holding their jurisdiction, the court has the ability to hold review hearings in all case types involving juveniles. So the purpose of a review hearing is to check, in quote, a party's progress in a particular matter. So that kind of is important in talking about reentry. Lauren?
Terrific. Thank you. So, I want to hear about what is happening now in Lucas County, but again, I think a foundation for all of us listening to the show, if you can explain what was happening, what wasn't working, and the process that you went through to start to begin to build the current reentry response.
Okay, so first let me tell you just a little bit about Lucas County. We are in northwest Ohio. We're really closer to Michigan than most of the areas in Ohio. We have a population of 463,000 people. Toledo is our county seat, and it's 313,000 people. So most of the people in Lucas County are living in an urban setting. We are the fourth largest city, and Lucas County is the sixth largest county, and 23.7% of our population are persons under the age of 18. So in Lucas County, we, like a lot of the other jurisdictions across the country, we're looking at our commitment and recommitment rates of the juveniles after serving time at the Department of Youth Services. I can tell you this was in about 2007. Our rate of recommitment was 30 to 35%. That's pretty high. So we, following the protocol of the specialty courts that you see across the country, like the drug courts and veterans courts you've heard about, we decided that we would we'd use that protocol and we would start a juvenile reentry court. So the snapshot of these kids in our community at that time would indicate that 52% of them were 17 years of age or older at the time of their commitment, and 88% had academic issues, 42% were school non-attenders with few credits toward their high school diplomas, 24% were arrested within 1 month of being released from the Department of Youth Services, 38% recommitted, 8% were eventually certified. Obviously, a challenging group of youth, and we know they exist, those kids exist across the country. So with our challenge, we decided that we would look at our candidates for our program would be those kids at the Department of Youth Services that were doing a fairly good job and were candidates for early release. So what we basically did was take the cream of the crop and place them in the program. They began the program as soon as they were released from the Department of Youth Services. We in our county are pretty good about keeping our data and following our numbers when we're deciding how we're performing. So we found that fairly quickly the kids were falling apart very fast. We weren't making them better. We were, if anything, making them worse. They were simply failing to follow through on their terms of parole or just simply reoffending or absconding. And we all know this, especially when you're working with specialty dockets or specialty courts. You really have these, you've got your population under the microscope. So they're under the microscope, and then what? Well, what we were finding is that there was a great need for additional services for the kids. So what we did, we decided that we would look at the whole population of youth and decide how we could meet the needs of our community with reentry with this particular population of kids. We were very fortunate that a lot of things were going on in Ohio. And Lauren could probably talk in a little more detail than I could, and it's not really necessary for this purposes except to say that there was a law, federal lawsuit in the state of Ohio, which really has served as this stimulus for substantial and significant juvenile justice reform. So that's going on. Casey Foundation, Kent State University, University of Cincinnati, we're doing incredible work in Ohio with juvenile offenders, assessing, looking at recidivism and risk factors for recidivism. We have some interesting work going on with keeping dollars in our local communities instead of sending the kids to the Department of Youth Services. And we received the OJJDP grant to focus on reentry. We also had our site program, which Charlie's going to talk about, which was having some great success. So we took our resources and we went to the National Center for Juvenile Justice in Pittsburgh and developed not a program but a process. Our process is a commitment that when the children, pardon the pun, it is a commitment by the community that when a child is committed out of our community into a long term institution like the Department of Youth Services or Youth Treatment Center, that we would begin our reentry at the moment of commitment. We would insist that the family continue to engage with the child instead of picking the child up 6 or 12 months later with little or limited contact to check their progress. We had stakeholders in our community committed to the fact that we would work with the families and with the youth at the Department of Youth Services to make those special preparations for their return. You know, there are reasons that children are committed to the Department of Youth Services. It could be educational needs not being met, many mental health needs, as all of you know, poverty issues, homelessness issues, monitoring in the community and their behavioral issues. So rather than waiting to address those issues at the time they return home, because we all know all children return home, we would start focusing on those while the child was at the Department of Youth Services. I don't want to talk too long because I hope we're going to have some conversation about it, but at 45 days, these children have unified case plans that become their roadmap for the progress they're going to make prior to their return and then to continue that progress as they transition into the community. We consider it a living document that just as kindergartners have their notes to their parents pinned down their collars, we kind of look at the case plan as being the document that will follow them at the institution and then home into the community as we address those needs. And we use our reentry and some interesting interesting technology in our review hearings as the court's vehicle to continue to participate in the program and to ensure that all those necessary stakeholders come in to play. I hope that Charlie could talk about the site center because we've kind of framed our reentry process with the site programming because of the success it's had in the community.
Okay. And Charlie, also feel free to add anything, about the history, because you've been working at the court for so long, of things that weren't working prior.
Oh, surely. Well, let me give you a quick background on the SITE program. I was working as a therapist at the Lucas County Youth Treatment Center, which is a locked facility. It's a residential treatment facility for youth who had been adjudicated delinquent on felony charges and had needed to be in a locked facility for their safety and for the community safety. And I'd been working as a therapist there for about 6 years and noticed that the treatment center had an excellent record for helping youth to make progress on their education toward their GED. They were in school 5 days a week, regular school hours, with public school teachers and who were really dedicated to helping them catch up. And most of them were around 2 years behind in their education. So they had a long ways to go. They were leaving the youth treatment center with a GED or a diploma, many of them, but then I noticed that they weren't taking the next steps towards using that GED to develop, you know, job skills and then entering the world of work and getting their first jobs. And what I noticed was that they just didn't know how to do it. If you think about the process of most kids as they get their first work experiences, they're teenagers. They have a job that's part-time while they're going to school. Often they get their first full-time job through the people their parents know. And it's a sort of an informal networking process. Well, many of our kids didn't have that kind of network available to them. And so often they're entering their adult life at 17 and a half, 18 years old, and they don't have the skills necessary to find and keep a job. So we looked around to see, was there some money available to develop a job training program? And what we hoped to provide initially was job readiness training, linkage to employment, some community service activities that have skill building involved, and some recreational opportunities so that they would have pro-social activities to use their free time with. And we started off right at the youth treatment center while they were still in residential treatment, and they were getting toward the end of treatment. They were allowed out on weekends and that sort of thing. So the whole process of developing SITE has been a kind of a steep learning curve. We probably made as many mistakes as you can make in understanding the problem and then trying to correct a program and design a program that would meet the problem. And one of the first mistakes we made was thinking that if we just talk about it, if we just do some classroom work and show them how to fill out applications and practice doing interviews and all of that and then send them out to their first job, that they would step out and be successful. And that didn't work. One of the reasons it didn't work is because they didn't have the support behind them, the kinds of things like it's getting up in the morning, learning how to take feedback from supervisors, learning how to do teamwork, learning how to follow directions and ask questions, learning how to make mistakes and knowing how to put those mistakes in a proper perspective so that they could learn from them. Those are soft skills, and in the world of job training language, those soft skills are critical. Most of us develop those skills over a period of several years as we go through adolescence into adulthood. What we found was that our kids did not have that experience. In a sense, they were experientially deprived, not just in terms of doing the kinds of things that other kids have the opportunities to do, but learning the social skills and the more subtle skills for interacting effectively with adults. So very quickly, they would have problems on a job. They would just quit, or they wouldn't show up on time, and they would get fired. So we thought, well, we're going to have to rethink this. And so we started to develop a program that was more experiential. And the philosophy of treatment evolved to reflect that the idea is that developing life skills and work skills is a developmental process that takes time, but more importantly, it takes experiences. You can't talk about working. You have to actually do some work. You have to give adolescents work to do that has some meaning and some substance to it and allow them to go through the process of work hardening and skill development. So talking about it doesn't get it. You got to do it. Concept that we started to develop was that they need a relationship. They need a relationship with someone who they can begin to trust, who will be a sounding board for them as they learn these skills, someone who can give them feedback. And so we found people in the community through businesses, through community organizations that had the desire and the willingness to work with our kids and to teach them these things. And so as a result, over the last 8-9 years, we've developed a huge network of people and organizations in the community that will work directly with our kids, give them activities, instruction tools, opportunities to do good work. We've worked with Habitat for Humanity. We've worked with food bank programs. Our main partner is Toledo Botanical Gardens outreach program called Toledo Grows, which has grown into quite an amazing program I'll talk about later. But generally, we've tried to address helping kids develop those skills that they needed for finding and keeping a job by actually giving them work to do. What we've done since then is just increase the network of relationships that we have with the community. One of the things that I think is important, especially in hard times, is understanding that there are not always tons of entry-level jobs for kids out there in a community. You know, McDonald's, Burger King, grocery stores, landscape companies, that sort of thing, that can hire kids. But there are people out there who have knowledge and skills, and there is always work to be done. A friend of mine says that very clearly. He says, you may not always have, he says this to the kids even, you may not always have a job, you know, put that in quotes, but if you have skills and you have tools and you know how to use them, you will always find work to be done and someone who will pay you to do it. And that's true of every city, even cities that are suffering from, you know, economic difficulties. So there's plenty of work to do. The other thing we tried to do was get the kids involved in more community service activities so that they begin to redefine themselves by doing things that involve giving something back from themselves, giving some of their energy and the work that they do, and then seeing the end results of that. I'll give you a good example.
Yes. I was going to ask you to sort of paint a picture of what some of the youth actually do in the program. And
sure.
Going to give us a, and also, I've heard you talk about how the site program supports the mission of the juvenile court. So if you can speak to that as well, it would be wonderful.
Certainly. I'll start with that, because the one of the main aspects of the mission of the juvenile court is community safety, skill building, and restorative justice. And if you take a look at the activities that youth are involved in, all three of those issues are addressed. A good example is there's a local community center that serves the needs of children in a neighborhood through after-school programs, through Feed Your Neighbor programs, and that sort of thing. Our site kids started off their relationship with that program. It's called the Padua Center. And they started off by building a garden and bringing the kids in the neighborhood into the process of building the garden. The second thing they decided was they would like to have chickens and raise chickens to provide eggs for people in the neighborhood and provide some learning opportunities for children there. So our kids found a plan, bought the raw wood. We bought the raw wood, and they built a chicken coop that's really kind of amazing and state-of-the-art. So in the process, we integrate the GED training, the mathematics, the construction techniques, a little chemistry, a little design, and the kids took that pile of wood and built a fantastic chicken coop, and then they learned all about chickens. So we try to integrate every activity that we do into the holistic education process. So what the kids that were participating in that did, and there were four kids actually that worked directly with a construction crew and an electrician and to build that chicken coop, what they did was they learned the math, you know, the algebra of it, the design, the mechanics, all of that, built the thing, and then they get a chance to see how that helps that community center. And they get the chance to go over there and teach kids in the neighborhood how to collect eggs and how to feed chickens and how to grow food in the garden. So it's everything that we do, we try to make it work that has intrinsic value and meaning for the people in the neighborhood. And when they see that they've done this thing in their lives that is positive and constructive and not destructive or hurtful, but helpful and they see the recognition that they get for that and the sense of satisfaction that they get having taken something from start to finish. It's powerful. It's a powerful experience in their life, and it begins to change their perception of themselves. It also changes their view of what their possibilities are. That's critical in working with kids in reentry. They have to see that there's something better out there for them. And if there's one thing that the SITE program tries to do in every aspect is to help them with that, to see that not only do they have something inside of them that to contribute to the community, but that there's something better for them, that it's an exchange, that they belong to the community and the community belongs to them, and they have a responsibility for that relationship.
And if I could piggyback on that a concept a little bit, we in Lucas County have done a very good job in going into the community to talk about our programming when we are going to begin new programming. The best example I can give is our juvenile sex offender treatment program. The success of programs like that is really dependent upon the community as a whole accepting the programming. We did a lot of education on what is the juvenile sex offender, and any of you in juvenile justice know that a juvenile sex offender is not a mini adult sex offender. We did a lot of education in that area, talking to the community, and then gave the community, rolled out our programming for the juvenile sex offender, which was keeping the kids in the community when we could, always being mindful of public safety and how we can wrap our arms around those kids to make them successful and help the victims' families as well as their families. Okay, so we use that protocol with the reentry program. The success of our SITE program in our community was really the anchor to go to the community and talk about these kids that are participating in the program. You know, these aren't shoplifters or kids that are just smoking marijuana on the corner. These are kids that their behavior is so significant in the community that it was necessary for them to be incarcerated. So these are gangsters. These are kids, you know, aggravated robbers, burglars, really serious offenders coming into the community. And we placed them in the program. The community had a lot of interest and knowledge about our SITE program around the community. We do urban gardens, lots of things. So we had the kids that were successful in the program being the tour guides, so to speak, to the community members and various stakeholders when they come to look at our programs, including the media. We have a lot of politicians that love to come to the community and talk to the kids and show off the great success of the programming because it's, you know, funded with county and state and federal dollars. And I truly believe that by showing the success of these kids, many stakeholders in the communities and social service agencies, the schools for the first time, and even the community colleges and the universities, they want to work with this special population of kids. And and really the SITE program was a foundation for us to be able to say to the to show the community that these kids are worth investing in. And as Charlie just said, it became such positive feedback for the kids that, wow, I can be successful in this program, and our Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur is going to come and shake my hand. And it really has really boosted, and I think, Charlie, you'd agree with me, boosted the success of the whole reentry process in our community as well.
Yeah, it really has, because the skills that these youth gain are not the end. They become the foundation for further challenges in their lives and accomplishments. I'll give you an example of a couple of boys that have been working with us for about 2.5 years. They started out being kids who were released from the youth treatment center or from DYS on felony charges. They had one of them had an extensive criminal history and background, and it was dangerous for him to be in his own neighborhood as he began to make changes. He had been deeply gang involved, and in his own neighborhood had become a kind of a bad king to the younger boys in the neighborhood, the, you know, the junior high kids and all of that. And when we began to challenge him to try to become a good king to these kids, he was able to step up. We gave him opportunities. He's still working on his education, but he has been given opportunities for more responsibility. A good example is he was interested in taking care of chickens, and 2 years ago we raised 500 meat chickens in our program, and he was significantly involved in that. He also learned how to do PowerPoint presentations to other interested community gardeners all around the city on how to raise urban chickens. And he would go out and talk to school kids, take chickens with him and talk to the kids. And he began to see that he had a talent and an ability to share that knowledge with younger people. And it was wonderful to see that. So now when someone comes to our urban farm, you know, he can take anyone on a tour and explain to them the whole process of how do you raise chickens in the city. He's now working. He doesn't work for us anymore except on weekends. He helps take care of the farm animals on weekends. But he has a full-time job working for a community housing association that works with that provides housing for elderly and disabled people. And he's on their maintenance crew staff. He's in training to be a maintenance engineer. So once he finishes his GED, then he's ready for the licenses and the other kinds of employment certificates that will help him advance his own goals. So
right. There
are, and I could give you a half a dozen stories like that. Another young man just got a job working in a factory that is a large manufacturing company that makes specialized tools. He wanted to be an electrician, and we partnered him with an electrician to wire one of our buildings that we were building. It was a chicken coop, but a really amazing place. And he learned all of that he needed to do that electrical work, and now he's working in a factory that has the opportunity for him to become a skilled tradesman. So the goal is, that's the plan is to get him started, but.
Mm-hmm.
But not to drop the ball. That's critical, that we don't drop the ball with these kids, that we keep the door open. Now, sometimes they leave us. They, for one reason or another, sometimes kids will, in a sense, fire us as their teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't fire them. We will work with them. They do get consequences for, natural consequences for not showing up to work and that sort of thing. But we'll continue working with them because what we found is that these are normal adolescents in a normal or their adolescence in a developmental process, and that they stumble towards success just like we did. We reframe the meaning of the word mistake as a normal part of their learning, and so that they can begin to talk about their mistakes and learn from them. So,
well, Charlie, that makes a good point in the sense that I don't want people to think that we have this. This is a kind of a Pollyanna approach to this is the most wonderful program, and everyone is very successful in the program. First, for the youth to be able to participate full-time, they have to have a GED or they have to have a high school diploma. The other
Be working on it, yes.
Or working on it.
Yeah, right.
Well, if they're working on it, then they aren't spending as much time at the programming because
Correct. Education
has to be their priority. And the site program, in a sense, becomes the carrot for these kids to get through their educational requirements so they can go over to the program and maybe
Right. Eventually
make some money. It also, if you take a step back and think, well, you've got a kid who's on parole, and traditionally, child's on parole, and he's assigned to go to school every day, be on time, go to this work program, follow his mother or father's rules, whatever the case may be, and then they check in with the parole officer, and maybe they're not showing up at their site program, and they've missed school. So what are we looking at then? We're looking at violating him on parole because they didn't really commit any new offenses, but they're not being accountable for what their requirements are. The next thing you know, they find themselves in that cycle of reoffending, and
right.
You make somebody mad, and the next thing you know, you're returned to the Department of Youth Services or to the
right.
Youth Treatment Center. This
they
way,
would sabotage themselves. They have
right.
a lot of all or nothing thinking at that stage, and they think, well, if I'm not making, if I'm not being successful, then I might as well be just as bad as I can be. And that was an old way,
right,
that we, a problem that we had to deal with kids. And I think now we're circumventing that. We're getting a way around that by dealing with the problems as they come up. So that, when they come to work, if they're having a problem with, oh, they had a dirty drug screen or they're having a difficult time in school, we can talk about that and then steer them toward the service through the court or whatever the program is, part of the reentry program, that's going to help them the most with that. But we don't say, well, oh, that's it, you can't work, you're out of here. We'll continue working with the kids so that they learn how to solve these problems as they come up.
When we create a system of graduated responses to their behavior, and with the use of review hearings and the accountability over at the programming with court personnel, and I say that in quotes, kind of monitoring their progress, we're catching them as they're starting to trip, as opposed to catching them after they fell. Instead of being AWOL for 30 days, we may find out after 3 days that the kids are AWOL, and then we start to look for them. One of the problems we were finding is when the kids were coming back from the youth, or returning to the community of the youth treatment center, that they were in this nice, warm, successful environment, cog-based therapy, parents come regularly to visit, lots of programming. Then they come home and they have to go to school and they have to walk through the gang neighborhoods, and maybe there's issues going on in their family home, such as maybe a mentally ill parent, other children with some additional issues. They were starting to fall down quickly again. We started it in October of this year, I think it's October of 2011, our reentry center, which provides a transitional environment for the kids, that they will continue their same educational process or program that they had at the youth treatment center. They'll continue that while they're in the community, but they report and they get to do some practicing through their COG therapy of those problems that they encounter as they're transitioning back into the community, and then they can participate in the SITE program as well.
Right.
And
they will make mistakes, but what happens is we have it sort of built into the SITE rules that,
right,
if they do a no-call, no-show, then that they get a verbal warning. The second time, they get written up. The third time, they get suspended. Now, they're not suspended forever. They're suspended for 3 working days, which takes money right out of their pocket, and it's a very real consequence. We also report that to their parole officer and the other programming that that's working with them, so that it becomes a front burner issue. What's the problem? How is it interfering with your goals and your progress? What are you going to do about it? So it becomes an immediate problem that everyone kind of focuses on and tries to get the youth to focus on, so he solves the problem. Sometimes it's as simple as the youth had transportation and now he doesn't, or mom and grandma, he's living with grandma and grandma just went into the hospital for some major surgery and he doesn't have a way of getting to work. So we can solve these problems. We can find a way to address those issues. Sometimes
so let
the
me
issue
just
no
jump
food
in here
in
for.
Sure, go ahead.
I just wanted to remind our listeners about the call-in number in case they have a question, which is 347-994-1149, and then they need to press the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And while you're giving all these examples, which are wonderful, of how you're supporting success, you're both using that word a lot, so I was wondering how you're actually defining success for this population, especially for those listening who may be looking to recreate or rework their own reentry process.
Okay.
Well, I will talk about that a little bit. Success, as all of us know, is such a relative term. Of course, we would hope that success would be that the youth went to the Department of Youth Services or the Youth Treatment Center, came to the community, was reengaged in school, finished their education, got a job, got married, had children, on and on and on. This is not a normal population of children, as all of us know. These kids have so much baggage that it's difficult for them to reengage in the community without having problems that are based on their background, where they came from. So in our in the circumstances surrounding their how they live, like as I just said a couple minutes ago, the you may have two mentally ill parents, poverty can be an issue, children living in challenging neighborhoods with gang involvement, all the violence going on. You know, we can all go on and on and on and talk about that. But in our mind, if we can find the strengths that these children have, help them address the challenges, whether it be homelessness issues, socioeconomic factors, maybe they have substance abuse, chemical dependency issues, mental health issues. If we can help them meet those needs in the community as they transition into adulthood, greatly reduce their likelihood of recidivism, and put the child in the right program at the right time with realistic goals, then we're going to be successful with them. We're not going to have 98% success rates. We know that. If we can have a high-level felony offender to come return to the community and not recidivate, or their likelihood of recidivism is reduced to maybe 30-40%, and hope that those would be low-level offenses and being able to get them back on track. But that's success.
Mm-hmm. And I would like to add to that, because I think the site program's definition of success is a little more specific, but also it has to be, because we're trying to prepare them for employment, for the world of work. It, regardless of what problems they've had in childhood, what problems their families have had, they are going to age out of the system, but they're also going to age out of their families. And they're going to have to support themselves. They're going to have to find some kind of work, whether it's the ideal job that they love or whether, you know, it's just a stepping stone, but they're going to have to support themselves. So our goal is that they leave our program with the skills necessary to find and keep a job, and that they have realistic expectations that are in line with the same expectations that every employer has for them. And if they can't meet those expectations, they're really going to have a difficult time, no matter what happens or what changes in those other areas of their life. You know, if they, for example, if their own personal issue is they have been smoking marijuana since they were 14 years old and now they're 18, they're going to have to learn how to face life on life's terms, not on their own terms of just getting high and forgetting about it. So they need to develop some strategies for staying clean and sober, and that's where the juvenile drug court is fantastic. But they also have to learn how to take feedback from supervisors, how to deal with difficult people. They're going to run into lots of difficult people in life, on the job, whatever. We all do. And if they can find, you know, successful ways of handling that and handling themselves in the situation, then they're more likely to stay employed. Our written goal is that 85% of our youth will find employment in the process of their training. And so far, we're doing pretty well. Even with hard times, our goal is that the kids will be able to leave us and step into another job, at least a part-time job. We have right now three kids in college who are still working with us, but they're also working other jobs. We have three kids working in a local factory. We have kids working with other nonprofits who are employed to work for them. What I'd like to find in 2012 is 50 employers that could be corporations, companies, mom and pop businesses, anyone, 50 employers that will agree to work with one youth for 1 year and will take them beyond what we can teach them in those 16 weeks of job training, that they'll take them and help them get the next steps toward success. And if we can find those folks who will take a chance on our kids and work with us, I think not only will they get some successful employees out of it, but we'll get a lot more long-term success in moving our kids completely away from the justice system. And obviously our goal is that they never enter the adult justice system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can't win with every kid. We know that. Some of the kids step into criminality as soon as they're out of residential treatment, or they'll try to ride the fence. They'll try to put one foot into the street life and another foot into this legitimate life, and that never works. They always fall off the fence, and sometimes they fall on the wrong side.
We have about 15 minutes left, and I really want to maybe now turn to more of sort of the tips and lessons learned. So I have a series of things that like to hear from, but one of the things, you know, Charlie, you were talking about some of the common barriers that arise, and I know that from this work that probably the two largest challenges we always hear about for reentry is family engagement and also education. So I just don't know if you've had some strategies that have worked locally, and then I'll go on to some of my other questions.
No, the first one was family. The first one was family engagement, and the second one
correct.
Was
what was education?
Education, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, and we're working on both of those. A part of the problem that we encounter with family engagement is often kids are coming out of residential treatment, and when you do an honest assessment of the family's ability to help them, there are some real serious deficits. Parents often who are chemically dependent or physically ill or mentally ill, and the child may be the only adult in the house. And that sometimes happens. Often these families have been dealing with grinding poverty for decades, and there's no income. And even having enough food at the end of the month. I'll give you a good example. One of the things we're planning on doing with our training center when it's built, and the kids are actually involved in building the training center. That's really a very cool thing. And when they're done, they'll be able to look back at that and say we built that place. But one of the things we're going to address is that they often come to work not having had any breakfast, not having had much to eat the night before, and they didn't bring their lunch. Well, how do you focus your attention when you haven't been fed? You know, I tell the kids, you wouldn't drive to Cleveland on 50 cents worth of gas. How can you work for 6 hours with no food in you? You know, it's just impossible. So we're going to try to address that issue. They can begin to learn how to process the food they're growing in the urban farm and to cook lunch, and they can learn how to cook lunch for a whole group, so we can take them and have them working in teams of two or three to put lunch together for the rest of the work crew, things like that.
Let me talk about family engagement just a little bit, Charlie, because the family engagement really begins way much further up the process.
Before they even enter treatment.
The families, we have found, and I can tell you, when we started our reentry court, the children would be returned from the Department of Youth Services literally to my courtroom, and then the parent or family caregiver would be in the courtroom, and we would have our first hearing. And it became very apparent to me from the very beginning that some of these kids had not seen a family member for a year or more, and that it was kind of the personification of the line that we have to keep families engaged throughout the process. So what we had decided is at the point the child is committed to the Department of Youth Services or Youth Treatment Center, we get a commitment from the family and really pretty much explain to the family that they will continue to be involved in the child's life while the child's at the Department of Youth Service or the Youth Treatment Center in making preparations for them to come back to the community. 45 days after their commitment to their institution, whatever it is, the court holds a review hearing. The parents are required to come to the review hearing. We use video conferencing for the institutions out of the community. For the Youth Treatment Center, obviously, that's just local, so they come to the court. We talk to the parents and start to make plans for the child's reentry into the community. If we can't keep the family engaged at that point, the relationship between some of these families that are already fractured really just deteriorates. you know, some of the parents were never really well engaged with the kid prior to the removal from the community anyways. So then we remove them further and make no requirements. It just, it really deteriorates the relationship. And these kids come home and they were, let's be honest, walking in the front door and going out the back door. And these parents weren't going to tell the parole officer they hadn't seen the child in years, or I mean, sorry, in months. So the kids that have the significant issues of relationship, we start to work on that while the child's at the Department of Youth Services through maybe mental health services, whatever the specific issues are. And we begin to talk to the parents about maybe some of their issues, such as their mental health issues, what they can do to, in a sense, get themselves ready for when their child returns mm-hmm. home. We don't give them the opportunity to get off the hook, so to speak. So the family engagement piece, by our review hearings and using video conferencing, the parole officers engaging with the family before the child come to the or return to the community, and a task is a social service agency we have that is going to provide wraparound services for the kids. Their workers are starting to work with the families like 45 to 30 days prior to the child's return to the community. So that relationship becomes, so we as a system can help those families with the relationships. And then and the reality is if we have a lot of 18, 19, 20-year-olds that are coming back, if they're not going to go home, then we start making those transition plans into alternate living arrangements prior to their return so they don't feel so deserted.
We have a question.
I just wanted to add one thing that in terms of engaging families. If you see the family as dysfunctional, then you're going to approach the family's connection with that youth as a dysfunctional issue. But if you see that the families have strengths as well, and that the parents have strengths, personal strengths, and they have life experience that they can pass on to that child in a way that's helpful, one of the most useful things I've done in the past was have the parents talk with their youth, with their children, about their own work experiences in life. What were the things they learned? What mistakes did they make in their working life? And when the kids get a chance to hear the parents' story, they begin to see some strengths in their own parents. And if you can use those strengths and that relationship, you're going to get more success out of the youth. The parents will become more committed to helping the youth in the process of being in our program and succeeding in the training. And they'll call often. You know you've succeeded when the parents call you to tell you what kinds of problems the child's having at home or whatever that might interfere with their work. It's great to see that.
Okay. So we do have a question. And just as a time check, we have only about 8 minutes left, and mm-hmm. I want to make sure we get your both of your recommendations about agencies and entities that should
sure.
be involved
right.
in building a reentry and the judge's role. But the question is related to, I think, when we were talking about success, that have you had an outcome evaluation of the program, especially as it relates to recidivism, or is that something you may be looking at?
Well, that's a good question. Judge, you want to address the court side of it?
I can tell. I'm looking at some of the numbers in front of me. We are in the process of collecting our data so we can see what kind of success we had through 2011. That really is when the program kind of hit the road running. Charlie has all sorts of numbers about the success of the site program, but I can
right.
tell you that if. So I hate to say that I do, but I don't have it available, but that would be fair statement. But whoever asked the question, if you email me, I will send you that information when I have it readily available. So I'm just not talking.
Is it something
I can tell
that's
you,
public, Judge, that we could post to the website so that you don't have to – receive emails from people?
Yes,
or,
we could do that. That would be awesome.
Okay, so we'll just do it that way, and we'll make sure it gets up in the next week or so, okay?
I know,
Charlie, just let me say one more thing, because mm-hmm. I know we're running out of time. This is really important. I go and listen to a lot of people speak about their programs, and I sit back in the chair and think, how do they do that? I can't do that in my town. It's so much work. And I want you to know that this is a big paradigm shift. And our community, we work on this every single day because it's become so important to us. And it's such a different way in looking at this special population of kids. And it's really hard work. And we are constantly changing our process, constantly fine-tuning, constantly taking two steps forward and three steps back. I can tell you that the family engagement piece is really critical, very important, and the education piece is very, very important. When you have those little successes, the schools want to jump on and work with you on this population because they're a large population. And the transition into adulthood, hooking up with some of the programming in the country or in your community for the kids that are aging out of foster care, very similar issues. I would give that as a piece of advice as you're working toward putting your programming together. Okay, Charlie, there you go. I just had to say that quickly.
Sure. Well, I guess, do you want to talk then about what other communities can do? First thing, I want to address the issue of assessing our progress. And we have to take an honest look at our program. One of the problems was there were not a lot of programs like ours to kind of measure ourselves against. So we have to identify specific criteria for the SITE program. It's do they learn the skills necessary to find a job? Do they learn the skills necessary to keep a job? And then do they have some relative period of employment where they can begin to take the next steps as far as the educational piece? Do they continue on their work toward a GED or a high school diploma? Do they achieve those things? And boy, when they do, we really celebrate that big. And we've had quite some success in terms of kids taking that GED, then starting college courses. We even have a program in SITE now that's a partnership with the local community college, Owens Community College, where they have an urban agriculture curriculum, and our kids can actually become college students while they're in the program. It's a wonderful way to transition them into college. They may not ever want to be an urban farmer, but they learn the skills necessary to make it in college. What I would suggest for any community that wants to do the kind of thing that we're doing is first of all, look at your community not in terms of its problems or its deficits, but look at the community in terms of its strengths. Who are the people in that community who know how to get things done? Find them, start conversations with them, talk about the idea of a reentry program that is seriously community-based. Find the people that are retired, who have talents and abilities, tools, knowledge that they would be willing to impart even to one youth. Start developing and cultivating those relationships. Secondly, look at all of the other nonprofit organizations and other community agencies that are doing work with youth that have resources. A good example is a local Latino community arts program in central city of Toledo, very high crime neighborhoods, but they were doing some wonderful things with kids and they had some space. So we wrote a program to develop a boat building project there. Well, we just put on display today our seventh boat. We built seven boats in 5 years, all with delinquent kids. And when those kids take a pile of wood and build a boat and then take it down to the river and put their mom in it and row her across the river, that's a life-changing experience. We tell them, no matter where you go or what you do, you can always call yourself a boat builder. And it's a powerful metaphor for life, because the same lessons that you have to learn to build a boat successfully are the same lessons you have to build a life successfully. And it's those kinds of experiences that that really help kids get through this process of development. So look around your neighborhood, look around your city, a county, whatever. Find the people that know how to get things done. Find the folks that have knowledge and tools. Find people also that are good with kids, that are willing to work with kids. And think about how can you use the ecology of the whole place, the natural setting, the geographic setting, and all of that, to begin to solve some of the problems of that community. Start seeing your kids as an asset and not a liability, and they will begin to see themselves as assets. Give them a chance to develop talents that they have inside of them and to do
Thank
work
you,
that's good.
Thank you. Judge Kupfen,
sure.
Do you have any final thoughts that you want to share at this point?
My final thought would be that use your juvenile court judge if you are interested in looking at reentry in your community. When juvenile court judges have meet, when any judge has a meeting, people come. It's amazing, and I say that humbly. The judge has the data. The judge has the insight into the special population and can bring people to the table for whatever reentry, whatever program it is. And I would suggest that you, for the people out there, I would suggest that that is your judge is a wonderful partner in your program, especially if you're looking at these high-risk kids and how you can make important changes. And I would also, and Lauren, you're probably going to talk about this, but the National Reentry Resource Center, they have a whole section on juvenile reentry. Great information.
Terrific. Thank you. First of all, thank you both so much for coming on today's show and sharing all this information with us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And as for the resources, as the judge mentioned, the National Reentry Resource Center, their website is National Reentry Resource Center, all spelled out, .org. And the Children's Law Center is where we will get this information posted that was mentioned on today's show. And there's a fact sheet about reentry there as well. It's childrenslawky.org.
Mm-hmm. I do have a model.
Go ahead.
Okay. I have a model program I would recommend if someone wants to see what a good program that's been around a long time works. It's called the Urban Core of San Diego County in San Diego, California.
Terrific. Thank you. I also want to let the listeners know the settlement or lawsuit that was mentioned earlier in this show, there will be an update on that in February. And our next show will be after the new year, and it will focus on the misuse of isolation as a mechanism of punishment or control. So to stay informed about this and other upcoming shows, you can follow us here on Blog Talk Radio or visit the Children's Law Center's website. Until then, have a wonderful holiday season and a happy new year. And take care, and we'll see you next time on Spotlight on Youth. Thank you again, Charlie, Judge Kupfen.
You bet. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Happy holidays.
Yep, bye.